We apologize for our tardiness. We had a loving dog. Mm-hmm. Penny, maybe we can check in after group and see if you have intel. Oh, you don't. Okay. She is so adorable. I said to the neighbor, this dog has got to go or stay. I have about 24 hours before...
Not a blonde lab, is it?
She is a blonde lab.
Oh, we have some intel about her. Mm-hmm. We have some intel.
Do you know where she lives? Sorry about this, folks.
Vaguely. Only. We... Yeah, in the area off of Denville.
One of our neighbors.
Yeah, Sequoia might have a little more.
Okay. All right, well, maybe we can check in after. I mean, she is the cutest.
She loves to ride in the car, I'll tell you that.
Well, if she had made it down here, the neighbor, you know, managed to con her into going up on her deck so that we could make the getaway. And so, I said, well, if she follows, I guess I'll put her in the car. And,
we'll never get her out.
Yeah. She is a heartworm.
Sweetie.
Yeah. Yeah, she looks like a slightly chubby, a little bit shorter, chubby Erica. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just has big lab eyes. Okay, so I understand you had homework.
Yes, we were, for those who weren't part of the group, the assignment was, what is it like to focus on what you have rather than what you want? And the afternoon group, we looked at a movie clip that was the one from Harry Potter, for the Mirror of Erised, where basically...
This is from the people who've already done the retreat, right?
So that when you look at the reflection, what you see is what you long for. And the trap is that you get caught in the longing for it and actually forget to live. Mm-hmm. And so the antidote actually...
Anybody have any experience of that?
And so living is to basically be grateful for what you have. And so the exercise was... What is that like? What is it like to focus on what you have rather than what you want? And since some of you have not had the opportunity to do that, perhaps you could just look at the difference between what you want and what you have and what you see about that.
They're a quick study.
Or you could do the difference between living in what you want versus living in what you have.
Well, that's clearly stated, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Living in what you want rather than living in what you have. All right, so given that, you know, how about if you find someone you do not know and have not spoken with? And keep in mind, there are all these fresh possibilities who just joined us. Oh, what?
We've either talked to each other or know each other.
Okay, we'll start. Let's just start. Breaking people up.
I'm going to fix the bike.
Oh, see there?
Rebecca, you didn't talk to me. Oh. I don't know you at all.
No. Rebecca? Ashwini? Rebecca? Okay, so who's going to go first and who's going to go second? Okay, y'all, okay, you have your recorders and like that there? All right, person number one, if you would begin, please. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do that. Thank you, partner. Well, what was that all about? Anybody? What did you see? Yeah.
I saw that I have the same big question or point of inquiry about this that I've had for a while. It's much richer, it's much more lovely, it's much more pleasant, it's much more open to live in gratitude, in enjoying all that one has. And I know that, I experience it, it's easier to experience here than anywhere. And still, it gets like skin deep. It doesn't get all the way in. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that, because that seems to be the next step for me to make this doing that a richer, more compelling in some ways exercise. I mean, I can see that the other is not compelling at all. It's not like
it's just degrees of not compelling.
Yeah, it's degrees of not compelling. It's okay. Like there's so much more here, but I can't like juice it. I can't.
Okay. So, tell me about your daughter.
That I can juice. Yeah, she's a lot of fun, she's full of energy, she's laughs a lot, she's got a sense of humor, she's super athletic, she's inquisitive, she's just got so much life in her.
Where do you feel that?
In my heart.
There you go.
But I don't feel the other stuff in my heart. I mean, I can feel her. Do you start there? Is that your instruction?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Start where you can do it.
Hmm?
Start where you can do it.
Yes. Well, so one of the things that we talk about is that we feel what we feel where we feel it, because that's where karma allows us to feel it. So there are certain places that it's okay and certain places that it's not. And most of us are pretty clear what the differences are there. Right? So, you know, if we said something like, you know, you could love any child like that. But all of our conditioning says, no, I couldn't. I don't even like a lot of other children. Let alone go to that place of deep love. So, it's not it's not about that, right? It's about the barriers that we have, that karma, that ego has erected. And some things are okay and everything else is not. And so we just practice going to our experience of the unconditional. Would that be a good way to talk about it?
Like the way I feel about my daughter is unconditional love.
Yeah. So we go there, and then we just begin to see what else we can bring into there. What else?
Try to tack on all these other things that you know, but don't appeal to that.
Yeah.
Sort of
bring them in. And the one of the quickest, easiest ways to do it is to learn to have attention on that experience. So you feel, so at first it seems like you need the daughter to accomplish it, right? But after a while, you begin to realize that, well, that experience is within you. And you can think about her, and then you're in touch with it, but it really is, it resides in you. It doesn't reside in her. And so that's your experience. So as you keep your attention on that experience, that's what you experience. That's the experience you have. And it doesn't actually matter what is in your sphere. When your attention is there, that's included. Now, the way we get bamboozled, of course, is that we look to conditioned mind to see if it's true. So there you are with the tree, and you know, you've seen the tree by the pavilion. Right? And then we look to conditioned mind. Well, yeah, but I feel that way about the tree the same as I feel about the daughter. But that's a conversation. So we begin to look at, when my attention is on that experience and I'm not in a conversation, is it a different experience?
Yeah, well, yes. Of course it is.
Is?
Yeah, it's a different, when my attention is on the conditioned mind, it's a different experience from when I'm just in the experience of the tree.
Yes. And what you allow yourself is to simply be in the experience of loving your daughter. Yeah. You don't have a habit, although she's not quite old enough, you might develop this habit as time goes on, of looking to conditioned mind to see how you feel about her right now.
Oh, we're working on that.
And it does get harder for exactly that reason, because conditioning increasingly comes in with more standards, more attitudes, more beliefs, more assumptions. She's developing them, you've already got them, they start to collide, and then we have to actually bring conscious awareness to something that once seemed to happen automatically, without any effort at all. And it wasn't that it happened without any effort, it's that all our attention was there.
Can I have a copy of this part? It'd be really helpful to me to be able to hear that again and again, because I'm so sorry.
Well, all you have to do is talk to me regularly, and I will repeat it again.
I was struck by looking in the mirror of Erised. And how really all the things that I'm thankful for were in the mirror as, I don't know, it's the strangest thing. Things like, I'm going to sell the house I live in, and I've got all this stuff to get rid of, and that was a problem. But in reality, I love the house that I'm in, and I'm really enjoying being there, knowing that it's impermanent. Mm-hmm. And I want to be at the monastery more, but there's some things that need to be taken care of, like this house, and there's another house that's being worked on, and and yet I'm at the monastery.
Do you hear? Do you hear okay? Mm-hmm. Up the volume just a little?
No, no, it's good.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. Oh, that was it. See, that's a really difficult one, right?
Anyway, I'm at the monastery. I mean, I am at the monastery, but what's put in the mirror is something that I can't do. You know,
that's something you're longing for.
And then we got the assignment at the end, and it was to record and listen, or make a recording about everything that you have, not what you want, but what you have. And so as soon as that was said, it was like I saw it, and it was like I didn't have to, none of those things were an obstacle anymore in the mirror. And I could see what had happened. And but making the recording was, I went into sort of a life review of, you know how we do an evening review and that, but I did sort of a life review of what I've been given and received and what I have and where I am. And I think it's a really neat thing to do because, you know, since my husband's died, I've lost two other people, one a family member, and one a very good friend. And I have another friend that's been diagnosed with something and is probably going to go quite soon. So this is just, so I'm kind of living in that right now where I can see that, boy, you just never know. You know, you could be doing fine this week and not next week. And so a life review is, I think, really good practice for that because it's especially when you focus on what you've been given and what you've had, which is enormous. Mm-hmm. And
Karen, if I may, not to derail you, but because I was looking at that, and we could say with Eric what you had, but that's not really true, is it? It's still completely present tense.
It is,
even though he's no longer physically here.
Yes, that's very, very true. And it's not because I'm, you know, I hesitate to tell people. I talk to him every day. I pick up that recorder and I bring him into being, at least to the system. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how it works. I don't know why it happens. But he's very much, I feel so complete. I don't feel lonely. I don't feel, I can't, it's strange. I don't feel lost, but I miss him. Mm-hmm. You know, but then I can bring him into being. Mm-hmm. And then there's the antidote. That's, I call it the antidote. Like, oh, I need to talk to him, you know. And I'm not sure what that had to do with all of this. But
well, you were talking about the life review and everything that you've been given and have received and had, and I was just struck by the
And there's no need
that
to
all present tense.
And there's really no need to go over the what was dysfunctional or what was this or what. There's really no need. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can tell, there's only good that comes from focusing on the good. There is only good, and I even feel like it could be good for him. I mean, on some level, I don't know.
Right, we don't.
You know, but I just think that. I mean, it wasn't until I actually did that life review that I went, wow, this is something really to keep in the forefront at this stage in my life.
And I would say at any stage in any life.
Because we
don't look at it.
No. The thing about it is the shift that happens when we got the assignment, I could see it. is that when you're in, when your attention is on having or on what you have, there is no wanting. That's the thing. It's just there's nothing, because the attention is on what I've received or what I'm receiving right now.
Right. So the quality of our life is impacting our attention,
yeah.
And that's what you're really seeing. You can focus on if people can just do a review of every disappointment, and every hardship, and every loss, and every and it would be a process of suffering.
Yeah.
Or focusing on receiving and having and the love, the enjoyment, the fun, the pleasure, all of the growth, the opportunities, the shared experiences. It's so full.
And of course, a huge what I have is this, because I'm sitting at dinner, looking out the window, eating this wonderful food, and looking at those beautiful foxgloves in bloom, and and to me, and I've done a lot of things in my life, but to me, this is the biggest adventure here at this monastery with this practice, and it's like, to me, it's more exotic, it's more interesting, it's just more than going to any foreign country I've ever been in. This is
the most foreign.
This is the most foreign, and I love it. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
exotic. I didn't think of a thing as exotic.
Exotic flowers.
Yeah.
Anyway. So thank you.
Good, thank you. Penny.
I was appreciating the way the question was phrased about what the experiences of living in what you have rather than what you want. And what arose for me was that if I really start looking at what I have, the list is really endless. And then when you said that, we feel what we feel where we feel it, because that's what karma allows. That was really helpful, because what I was seeing was, if I really start listing things from, I live here and I can garden and I have a house and I have an apartment and I have a car, I can go to things like when I switch a light comes out, and when I turn on a tap, hot water comes out. And what I was seeing is that's the level at which karma would say, that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
But
yeah, that doesn't matter.
Purposely to just eliminate a whole raft of things that I take for granted.
Yes.
That in the course of my day I do 1,000 times.
Yes.
And can miss.
Yes.
And I just was, you're saying that was really helpful.
And if they disappeared tomorrow?
Oh, man.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. So that was just putting those two together was really helpful. And really, if I just focus on what I have, I cannot finish the list. I can go on forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we add saying thank you to everyone that crosses our conscious awareness, then whee!
Right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebecca.
So I'm enjoying this, looking at this, and I'm looking at it in terms of not so much what I have, but what I am, because I can so go to that place of I've received so much, where I get tripped up in is the karmic disposition to look at, well, what have I produced, or what have I given back, or what have I accomplished? And that's where I can fall into the longing of wanting. And it was sort of the conversation we started with, I think, May 2nd night, about wanting to do something and then it getting attached to an outcome. Mm-hmm. And I could so relate to that conversation. And the life review that was just talked about, I can see how that happens. And when I'm in the place of I just received so much. That's pure gratitude. But somehow it gets sort of mutated to, and what am I giving back? Mm-hmm. And that turns into sometimes a subtle, often it's really a subtle sort of form of self-hate, but sometimes not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's funny, isn't it? Because let me reframe for you, okay, and see how this sounds. What's in it for me just saying thank you?
That sure does put ego.
That refreshes.
We got out of the wallpaper into the space of the ring, didn't we?
Yeah.
Boy, I don't think I would have ever thought to reframe it that way. Because, so say it again, what's in it for me?
Just saying thank you.
And
a funnier way to frame it, what's in it for me just receiving?
Yeah. Wow. So in that double reverse projection way, it points to me. What are you giving back when it's the one who isn't received?
Well, yes. So it says to you, well, what are you doing? What are you giving back? I mean, you're just a big taker. Now, if you decide to give back, there'll be a role for me.
Uh-huh.
I'll be in charge of that. I'll let you know if it's the right thing, the wrong thing, if you've given enough, if you haven't.
If it's going to work.
If it's going to work. What it says about you? Do people really appreciate it?
Yeah.
Are they seeing it? Are they not?
Is it a real accomplishment or is it a failure? Is it, yeah.
Full-time job for me.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, the process that we were looking at about wanting something other than it is, that is the genesis. I bet.
Yes.
Of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, here we are in the Garden of Eden. It's a little boring. I mean, there's nothing to do. So it just grows. Boring. Make some messes.
Me in charge of cleaning it up. Wow.
So it's such a fascinating assumption, isn't it?
Yeah.
That which is, the intelligence that animates, however we want to talk about that, needs something from us.
Yeah.
Wow. Where did that come from?
There has to be a separate self in order to be the giver back to the God who has given us so much.
Yeah.
Wow. The whole system's on tilt.
Right. And that's why a few years ago, I don't know if it's still, because I haven't been in Fuller Harmony in bookstores anymore. Even far between, but purpose.
A purpose-driven life.
Oh my goodness gracious! I mean, if you two subjects, control and purpose, there's you just put those on the title, and you've got a bestseller. You know, and passion, right? Everybody wants their passion. What am I? I just don't know what I'm passionate about.
Creativity.
Creativity is another one, yeah.
Because all of those have in common is it requires something separate. As if we're not passion, we're not creativity, we're not everything. You know? But, yeah.
And And we don't experience that because we're in a not conversation with ego.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really does go back to, for that life review, just, you know, so lately what's been coming to my mind is this recording that I made a few years ago. I'm a little ways between big birthdays, and I'm longing to have one of those memorials, you know, where people...
Why don't you have one for a birthday you already had? Because longing for the next one, I don't know if a memorial service is really worth it.
Well, I think that's what I mean. I did on my recorder. I had one for myself.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, oh, what I so loved about Rebecca was, you know. And it was great, but it's kind of lost in my sea of recording. So maybe it's time to, and I just had a birthday a few days ago, so maybe it's time to
make another birthday.
Thank you. And to make another one and focus on that, what Karen was just saying about how just everything we've received, not only will it take me to that place, but it'll also, I bet, smoke out that voice that will be pulling, and I'll get to see it, what you just said. Well, yeah.
Because, you know, the other thing, I don't know, I think we talked about last night, but when we put thank you together with simply being present and guided by life, then we get that, you know how somebody wants to give you a present. And so they buy something that they would really like to receive. And then they give it to you. Right? And, you know, it's nice, but, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
So now I've received all of this, and so I need to come up with some way to express my gratitude. So let me see, what would I like to do to express my gratitude? But if we get to that place of gratitude and then go to a thy will be done, then now we're available to give back, if we want to talk about it that way. I think personally it's unnecessary, but if we want to talk about it that way, then we would really up our chances of giving what life might like to receive. Because life came up with a gift.
That's beautiful.
But sometimes it seems like the gift that life wants from us is too humble for egos to meet ego standards.
Mm. Can you say that again, Sherry?
Yeah, just like that or a little bit different?
Okay.
That if we don't go to ego and what ego wants to give, to offer, if we really do follow life's guidance and we offer what life gives us to offer, often that gift is too humble for ego.
Thank you.
Yeah, because ego likes to be a pretty big deal. And so just maybe being a good friend or... being as kind as we can be, or trying to do the best job we can at work and be good to our coworkers, or that's not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, we need our name in lights and it's quiet.
Yes, I was looking at this in terms of the whole package of this human, like just having what's here instead of wanting it to be different all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, all those things that I think need to be fixed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, from the simplest little things like, you know, aging.
Well, when you fix that, you're
yeah, boy, would it just stop going south, you know, and wanting it to be different, you know, to just focusing on what I have, you know, to just on the life and the body and, you know, all those little things that I think are, all the little tendencies that are, you know.
Yes.
Yes. That this human, yeah, tends to express instead of like, gosh, I wish that, you know, was different. It's like, you know, oh, thank you. I don't know, you know, again, I don't know what, why, or what, you know, what gift those might be. Is that getting...
Well, two things about it. One, the first thing that occurs to me is the greatest gift might be your opportunity to find unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had this image, you know, if we're going to do a little personification of God. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a little meeting, sit down together, and you say... I don't want to complain. Always a good way to start that kind of conversation. So brace yourself because I got a lot of complaints. But you know, I have these tendencies, these qualities and ways of being. I think are a mistake. just saying. Don't take it personally, but maybe, you know, you weren't really focused. And of course, we wouldn't do that.
Right.
But in here, we can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Endlessly.
Endlessly.
You know, yeah. Just, yeah. Yeah, just have a whole suffering focused life, you know.
Right. Yeah. So when you look back at your life, I look back at my life, and what was my life about? Well, primarily, I was focused on suffering. Yeah. I mean, that's tragic, isn't it? And yet, we know that without, you know, a fair amount of focus on something else, that's really mm-hmm. what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and the opportunity to find unconditional love. I mean, I've heard it said so many times that...
I'm going to say it. and then when I go, you're going to stick a post, you know, like one of those facility signs. And on it, you're going to write our best opportunity to find unconditional love.
That kind of stops me cold. You know, I think just seeing that, you know, it keeps all those things in place is all that, like, not wanting them to be, you know, just resisting it all the time.
Right. Well, and again, we get it. So, in terms of society, that's the really self-effacing, good person, modest
mm-hmm.
way to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I have my balls. I'll certainly tell you about them. In case you hadn't noticed. and that's the, you know, I mean, we get a lot of information that's the way to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to figure out first what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
Not just to protect yourself in case everybody else mm-hmm. brings it up. But also because that, you know, and I'm aware of these and I'm working on them. And then to see the arrogance of, you know, I have this human
And I'm going to pick this human apart and just endlessly pick every little thing. And we start having a sense that, this might not be coming from that really good person place. It's nasty.
It's nasty.
I mean, because really, whose business is it? You know, none of us, as far as we know, I know there are the folks who, you know, up there beyond the clouds, we all got together and, you know, I'll be your mother and you will, and maybe it goes that way. I don't know. Maybe it goes that way. Somehow I doubt it, but maybe it goes that way. So I'm going to stick with my original sentence. We didn't decide this, right? We didn't go through a nice checklist of, yeah, go to those and like that. And it turns out a lot of them were really bad decisions because I came out much shorter. So, you know, when we stop and realize, however you want to talk about how we got here, we've been produced.
Yeah.
Life, this is what life has come up with.
Yeah.
And I just don't think we're in a position to second guess it.
Absolutely not. You know, but yeah. And there's the humility of just like, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know why or how or what.
And all of the qualities that we have in ourselves that we've been taught to judge or criticize or dislike, tons of people have those same qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And when we learn to find them dear or charming or sweet or whatever it is in ourselves, then we can see that in other folks as well.
Yeah, what a kindness. And I just love that.
I do too. Just love, 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 love.
Just love, love. Unconditionally.
Unconditionally. Yeah, thank you. Oh, I don't never think to look for your hands.
So, what I was looking at, something that I was looking at this morning said, you know, all the armor that you wear, all of the ways in which you want to protect yourself from pain only stop you from being available to all the love that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
go ahead. I'll remember. Because I'll remember. Go ahead.
So I was looking at it with the long game, right? Because if I looked at the karma, it's a sense of exclusion, right? That you don't belong, or exclusion. Not that you don't. That
so the armor,
yeah,
is meant to keep the pain out, but really it's a barrier.
Right. It's a fighting stance in order to. It's a barrier. That's right. And the barrier is to rejection or exclusion or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I was looking at is love is truly everywhere. I mean, it's my experience. It's in the flowers, it's in the trees, it's in every note of intelligence. It is the currency of existence, is love.
Mm-hmm.
And that karmic orientation of saying that there is that only if love appears in this form is it right for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I don't have the exact form or shape of love that it fits with this receptor, then love doesn't exist for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not that, that is rejected. Actually, what you're describing is you're rejected.
That's right. And so that there's a way in which the longing is a signature of this is the only way it has to be for it to be perfect.
Uh-huh.
And of course, not only is it never going to be, because it's looking for something that's never going to fit,
mm-hmm.
it's also the way in which love in all forms cannot be received.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to be able to drop that if the key doesn't fit exactly with the lock, then you throw away the lock and key and decide that, you know, there's not no door to open here. But to recognize that that is what's stopping you from experiencing and receiving love in all forms and all shapes and all experiences. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is, if the key doesn't fit the lock, learn to pick locks.
Yes. Get that lock
in a hacksaw. whatever it takes to get out of that limited, it has to be this way or not at all.
Yeah, that love cannot be your felt experience because you're always focused on the one way it's not. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can't have it. Mm-hmm.
And you know, if we stay with that, many, many folks I project have had the experience of that's what ego does, even, excuse me, after it has said, yes, that's right. Okay. Perfect key, perfect lock, perfect fit, perfect yes. Yes. And then the campaign begins. Well, except, oh my God, I didn't know.
In this instance.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Jen?
Wow, that was really helpful. The whole evening has been amazing. But what just flushed through with that was the thing we were talking about a little while ago. And the way I heard you say it a few weeks ago was something like, we'll only allow ourselves to be happy in certain situations. Karma only allows us to be happy in certain situations. And I just saw how what it feels like is when we do something like the adventure that was being talked about earlier, where we set out basically to see past all of this, it does this, the karma feels like it just throws everything at us, our ego throws everything at us to try to wear us down in terms of that, but I don't feel the way. Like, so on the radio show recently, we were talking about love is not a feeling, it's an experience. And so it feels like that. It feels like that's what's possible, is that. Oh gosh, I don't know how to say it, but basically that we can expand past looking to how I feel, and if that's the marker of, well, I mean, gosh, is this really, you know, do I feel the way I'm supposed to feel? And
go ahead.
Yeah, no, let's go.
Well, kind of a simple working definition of unconditional love could be not indulging ego access.
Yes. Yes.
So rather than I'm going to treat you in a particular way because I'm filled with unconditional love. That other person, I'm not, because no, I don't feel unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And so if not giving ego access in either case, mm-hmm. I think we get a fairly good working model of unconditional love.
That's really interesting that you said that, because what I saw a little bit earlier in group was, wow, I think what's so profound about being in group is that, at least for me, it feels like we experience what we are when we're sitting in group.
Yes.
And then that's what's happening, is there's no ego access.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When we're just here, present.
Yes.
Completely taken up with the experience of what we actually are.
Yes.
And that's why it feels so amazing.
Yes. And I bet everybody in the room knows the experience of being in that situation, identified with ego,
yeah.
and not having the experience at all.
Yeah. 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 And because you don't have access to us.
Yes. Because we, it's, so with what you started out, I'm looking for an experience of unconditional love.
Yeah.
But what I'm always looking for, what I is always looking for, yeah, is ego's perspective.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Beth, did I see you?
Yes. So, in the mirror of Erised, I saw that I wanted a perfect relationship.
God, you know,
and so I saw the wanting of that is what always draws me out of my own experience. So after we were given the homework assignment, I think I was sitting in meditation, I can't really remember, somewhere it dropped in. Because what happened was, then ego comes in, I project this ego coming in with fear that I'm never going to have that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll want that, but that is just unattainable. That is just, what's a perfect relationship anyway? I mean, it's got a lot of standards and a lot of
really
functions.
You think perfect, not just good, not loving, not but perfect. Yeah, you know that if you ever get past the first date, you know, miracle.
Yes. Oh, but what I saw when I sat was, oh my God, you know, kind of this fear of like, you know, is that even, you know, what am I really looking for? Da, da, da. And it just dropped in. And it's like, what I have now in being in present moment experience, I will never find it to be expendable to have the perfect.
So, in other words, when you are present, you have the perfect relationship.
I think that's what it's pointing at.
And you're not, you realize you're not willing to give that up to follow ego's idea of a perfect relationship.
Exactly, and that's where the having versus the wanting became very clear. Mm-hmm. I have this. Mm-hmm. This is here. Mm-hmm. And this is
yes. So you already have the perfect relationship, or you know what the perfect relationship is.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, within that perfect relationship, I project you are practicing. It's kind of what we were talking about with Sequoia. You're practicing seeing what ego brings to that, to say, that is no, that's not. That is not it. Okay. And how ego tries to bring the world of duality into the perfect relationship.
Yes.
Yeah. So in practicing with that and not allowing ego to intrude, to insert itself in the perfect relationship, you're practicing to actually have a relationship with a human being who is not you.
Yes, yes. And what I saw with that was, when I'm present to my experience, to the experience that's happening right here, which I've never been allowed to. So I never allowed my partner to have their experience, because that they shouldn't be having that experience. That's not perfect. And then it became all about work about me. Then, well, I have to be perfect. You know, I need to make it on my half be perfect.
Uh-huh.
But to really...
Well, and that's so interesting. That really does take us back to Sequoia, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
who is
setting... I'm going to make my half of the relationship. Anybody who doesn't run for the door right then is...
Can you imagine that first date?
Yeah.
What are you doing? So what I thought was, when I get to have the whole gamut of experience of everything, then it will be, it will be the perfect relationship, at least here, in that sense of, I'm good with anything that comes up. No judgment.
All my best opportunity to see what's going on, and choose unconditional love.
And choose unconditional love, exactly, because that's the only way then, and what it came into was, I'm not going to give that up for any relationship that that I get constantly pulled out. So what I'm trying to say is, I finally got to a place of, I'm not scared of not having an other relationship.
Yes.
That's what I think I'm finally trying to say.
Yeah.
It, like, it cleared up, because what I have is this.
Yeah.
And I'll never give this up or that.
That's right. Well, yeah, and it really does let another person off the hook.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're working out the perfect relationship with you.
Yeah.
And then in the realization of all that's involved in that, it does create much more tolerance for the humanity of other folk.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels that way. I mean, feel might be the wrong word, but that's the sense I get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, oh, yes. Working out our own salvation diligently.
It is a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I have an assignment, Sherry.
Oh, you have an assignment.
Isn't that good?
Because they were just going to go off and enjoy their perfect relationship.
So, this is something to do to the next week. Anxiety, it's a reading from the fear book. Anxiety is the fear of fear. The dread of an experience I won't be able to stand. The first step to make peace with how I'm feeling. The first step is to make peace with how I'm feeling. For many of us, that notion is revolutionary. We were taught that feelings are something to get through, get over with, get away from, or deny. Most feelings are unsettling, untrustworthy, embarrassing, inconvenient, even dangerous. So to make peace with your feelings, imagine that you're simply going to coexist with them. You don't have to worry about them or control them. You don't even have to take them personally. All you have to do is let the feeling be, and if you stay with it, before long, they will let you just be.
Are you going to post that?
I can.
Would that be helpful?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the assignment was just practice being with your feelings.
We don't even have to figure them out.
No, nothing.
Right?
Just be with them.
Just be with them. Just sit down somewhere and let them sit down next to you and just be with them.
It's like a conversation with God.
Yes. Yeah. All right, very good, very good. All right, thank you.